Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Well, the second weekend of August is the weekend of the Northwest Reiki Gathering. And in the beginning, some 29 years ago, I believe, I was one of the organizers of the Brighton Bush Gathering, as it's affectionately known, or officially as the Northwest Reiki Gathering. And what has happened in the last 29 years is that this gathering has become a movable community, in the sense that there are some people, there are two people at least, who have come to every gathering for the last 29 years. I came to every gathering for the first maybe 17 or 18, and then I started taking breaks, and I went back again this year. And it was a wonderful homecoming. And I met people who I had known for years, and I also met people that I had met a few years ago, and then I also met new people who were there for the first time. This gathering is for all Reiki students, of all initiations and all forms of Reiki. And later on in the month, I'm going to get to interview some of the Brighton Bush or Northwest Reiki Gathering Board of Trustees, who can talk a little bit more about the essence of the gathering now. Because back when it was formed by Insight by Barbara West of Eugene, Oregon, she just felt like it was important for Reiki people to get together. And I seconded that emotion, but I didn't really understand why. And now I just know that community is so important to us as human beings. It's important to us as Reiki students. And it's important to us in being able to, for me, being able to come together with like-minded people, be less on guard and more relaxed, and to create an atmosphere or a field of energy, as we might call it, called community. So this weekend, this last Brighton Bush weekend, I got to sit and have meals with Ellen and Tim Sosinski, who just charmed me. And also, their story about coming to the Brighton Bush gathering was really sweet. So I am very lucky, and you are very lucky as listeners, to be able to listen to their story. So Ellen and Tim, welcome.
Thank you, Phyllis.
Thank you.
Oh, great. So, of course, we always start with Reiki stories, and this is no exception. So, Ellen or Tim, would you like to start?
Sure. Our older daughter was took harp lessons, and where she took her harp lessons was about 45 minutes away from here. So I would take her and I would sit in the harp teacher's living room. And one day she had a book out about Reiki. This was in 1997.
Wow.
And I had no idea about Reiki. I didn't know what it was. And so I was asking her about it, and she was raving about it. And it turned out one of her other students' mother was a Reiki master and had initiated the harp teacher into Reiki. So I called this master, and I went over, and she gave me a treatment, and it wasn't the most ideal circumstances. She had 3-year-old twins in the other room listening to Barney and Sesame Street and a 4-month-old puppy that came up and licked my face. But I was very, very intrigued. And wow. So when I came home about a week later, one of the senior centers was having an integrative health fair. So I had about an hour before we were having house guests. So I ran over there, and I ran into two women that I knew who I didn't even know they knew each other, but they were there together. And I asked them if they knew if anybody there was talking about Reiki. And they proceeded to tell me that the one woman 6 months previous had been diagnosed with lymphoma and was given 3 months to live. And wow. The other woman took her to a Reiki practitioner. And the woman who had been diagnosed really credited Reiki for a lot of her healing. The end of that story is that she lived for 13 years as opposed to 3 months.
Wonderful.
So she so the woman who had taken her, said, well, I know this practitioner's, Reiki master, and I can call her. She lives in the Midwest now. She used to live here, and I can call her and, ask her to come out and give us a class. And I'm like, I don't really know what this is about. I don't really know these two women, but why not? And so Eleanor Hunter Fleming, who is my Reiki master, came out and she taught the three of us along with, another woman. Uh-huh. And we went into practice together right away. And so that's been since 1997. And I used to host classes for Eleanor here. And, in 2007, she initiated me as a master.
Wow. So just to clarify things, where is here?
Sorry. We are in Maryland. We're in Clarksville, Maryland, which is near Columbia, Maryland, between Baltimore and Washington.
Ah, okay. And so she came there to teach the class.
She did. She came here from the Midwest, which is where she was living at the time, and still is, actually. And she came very often during those 10 years, and I was able to sit in on her classes. And when she agreed to train me as a master in 2005, so we did that long distance, and she would come here and do classes, and I would go there, and and that's where we are. So in 2007, I became a Reiki master and started teaching the classes myself.
Uh-huh. Great. And what about you, Tim?
I mean, well, my story's a little more convoluted in a way. when I saw how interested Ellen was in this, and she would give me treatments, I was a great receiver of Reiki, and it always had a huge impact on me, and I literally couldn't function. I had to go to bed after a treatment, so it was very powerful for me. But I looked at it as something that was required you to sit there for 45 minutes or an hour to give a treatment and have all kinds of things that were contrary to my disposition. I was a kind of hyperactive, uber type A personality person. And for me, the idea of Reiki just seemed like, wow, I don't think that's for me. But
he was good with receiving it, but he didn't know that he could give a treatment.
Yeah, it just seemed very foreign to my existence. But as time goes on, you start realizing that, all of life isn't chasing around after every little thing and, trying to cover every detail, and that sometimes you need to put a little space into your, existence. And so Reiki seemed like maybe had some possibilities. And finally, about the same time Ellen was thinking about, her final thrust to becoming a master, I said, you know what? There's another fellow and I, we're both interested in it, and let's the two of us, do a guy thing, and we'll basically take Reiki together.
Wow.
And so we approached Eleanor, and this other fellow and I, we took the class, and we were in a class with two teenage boys, and there was four guys in the class. So this was
unusual
and a little bit of a high male content class, but it was great. And it was fascinating in the sense that the instructor, Eleanor, my master, she made very strong points. She said, you have to practice every day, and that's really how Reiki will come to you. And that's turned out to be true. The practice has been, for me, a great revelation and a great way of peeling back the onion of my existence.
A beautiful story.
And seeing the world in a different way. Thanks.
Yeah. So you both had your own Reiki story. Sometimes, one person takes it and then the other one comes along, as they say in Australia. So it's great to hear that you had your own path and your own timing. And that was wonderful that you listened to yourself.
Well, we try to be independent. We're two human beings with different interests and different thoughts, and we oftentimes do things in parallel, but not always.
But this has been fantastic. sick, Phyllis, because now whenever I do classes, Tim comes to all the classes and assists, and it's been a really nice sharing for us, and it's great for me to have him tell his story and to encourage people to really practice every day. And, you know, it's one thing to hear from the teacher, but then to hear it from somebody else is really wonderful. So
we're very lucky to have a community here that, has a lot of strong practitioners and people who are willing to come to the classes and share their experiences. It makes it quite a rich time.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine. That's great. So how did you get to Breitenbusch?
Well, I had read about it when they had the Reiki magazine, when that was in existence.
Oh, yeah.
I had read about it. And I was very, very hungry to get together with other masters, especially because I didn't know any other masters here. And I don't remember exactly what prompted me to, you know, that particular year, but it was the first, well, I guess it was the first year that I was a Reiki master. I was initiated in March, and then that August I went to my first master time at Breitenbusch and then stayed for the weekend. And it was a very big step for me because Tim and I travel a lot, but we do it together. And this was, I was going by myself. I didn't know anybody. And, it was a big step, and it was fantastic. And I've gone ever since then. I've gone every year except one, and Tim has come for four of those years too.
Wow. That's great. So what brings you to the, gatherings over and over?
Well, like you said, the community, it's just, it's phenomenal, and we're seeing the same people a lot, and we enjoy making those contacts and then of course meeting other people. And it's been very exciting for us because the last three times there's been somebody from our community who's gone with us. So that's been phenomenal. You met, well, actually 2 years you met them. You may not remember from when you were leading the group, was it last year or
two years ago.
Yeah. And, we had a couple that came with us. And then last year, another friend came, and this year, one of my students came that you had the opportunity to meet as well.
Yes. Really lovely people. And can you talk a little bit about community and what it means to you and the benefit for you and your practice?
Yeah, for sure. Part of what has happened here, which has just been phenomenal, is we are yoga students. And after yoga, we always go out to brunch. It's a Saturday morning class, and there's a core group of people that go out for brunch afterwards. And some of us had already become Reiki. And so if somebody had a hurt, we were standing there putting our hands on them, and you know, everybody was getting curious about it. And now a great deal, most of them, I'd say 95% of them are now also Reiki because they came to the Reiki classes. And once a month we hold a Reiki exchange here at the house. And it's just been a phenomenal community. And I have to say that before this happened, before we joined the yoga community and started with the Reiki, I liked living here, but I didn't feel a sense of community. We had a lot of friends, but in many different parts, you know, they didn't all know each other. And now this has just been such a very strong community, and the Reiki exchanges have been wonderful, and the people just, they really love each other. And so we've gotten to the point where we come an hour before we do treatments so that we can talk about Reiki, but also socialize with each other before we do the treatments.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And if you had to define what community was for you, how would you do that?
I guess a group of like-minded people, not necessarily all the same or have the same thoughts and feelings, but like-minded people who really care for each other and get together often and keep in touch. And you know, I just had surgery this summer, and so many of them came over to offer me Reiki treatment and, you know, whatever else we needed here. And I think just that kind of sharing and love and caring. Uh-huh. It makes it a community for me. I don't know if you have different thoughts, Tim.
Yeah, I'm an architect, and so I always think of it in terms of construction, I guess. And, you know, I think of you start out with maybe a single person, and that person comes together with another person, and you have a tent, maybe a small little tent, and then eventually over time you have other people who might have adjoining tents, and then you decide maybe it would be better to have one bigger tent, and you sort of come together, and you now the tent that we inhabit is a wonderful, wonderful sheltering element that provides joy to a lot of people. It brings people together, allows them to act cooperatively and do amazing things. Our group of people, or the various groups of people, all kind of touch each other, sometimes through us and sometimes through each other, that in a way that they can make positive action that makes a huge difference in this, our immediate environment, and I think in some respects in a larger environment. So it's an astounding phenomena.
Mm-hmm. And obviously Reiki isn't the only way to community, because I feel like, as you might do, that this is a human phenomenon, that this is something that as human beings we go toward. You know, it's just natural. I remember when we were talking about your traveling, and Tim, your description, I asked you what really touched you about Africa, and your answer was so beautiful. And so I'm going to ask you again, in this context, what really touched you about Africa?
Yeah, Africa for me was a revelation. I kind of understood that it would be different. And I've had the joy of traveling a lot of places through Asia and Central America, South America, Europe, and all of them have their interesting characteristics, but I never really quite understood the impact of a place like Africa, I guess. And more particularly where we were at was in the Okavango Delta, which is part of Botswana. Botswana is about the size of Texas, and the Okavango Delta is about the size of Connecticut within Texas, which means it's a 2.5% or 3% of the size of the overall country. And it's a sparsely inhabited country. There's only 2 million people in Botswana and almost nobody in the Okavango Delta, because it's largely game preserves, or concessions as they call them. And when you're out in this area of the Delta, you know, there's almost no human habitation. But what you do see is a large population of animals and, mammals and birds and every kind of creature you can imagine. And you have a sense of the primeval existence that maybe the earth was like 100,000 years ago, and where you are essentially a very, very, very small part of a large organism. And you have this, you're in touch with the reality of life as it probably was for millions of years on this planet. And, you know, when you get right down to it, we're pretty capable of getting back to that just by our own folly. And right. So if when you're there, you realize that our existence, what's out there, is actually the more fundamental part of the world and the more fundamental part of life on this planet. And it's a revelation. It's amazing, and a great feeling of knowledge to see that and to perceive the interaction of the creatures and the environment and what it can really mean to you as a human.
Well, I haven't been to Africa myself, and I would have loved to have gone, but at the time when I was planning to go to Africa, I just realized that if I went, then I would have to go back again and again, because I think I would be like you.
That's right. We actually are going back.
And it would be hard to say no. And so I just didn't go there. And there is a part of me that I have a couple of friends who are Africa goers, as I would say. And their stories and their impressions are so beautiful.
Yeah, you learn a lot just by just being there, realizing the isolation and the beauty of it all. It's overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. So, Ellen, what was your? How did Africa touch you?
Especially being in the bush on safari was just phenomenal, and watching the animals and learning about their community and how they survive was just fantastic. And being able to see them in the wild, we were in a truck and we didn't faze them at all. They didn't pay attention to us, so they really were going about their lives. In all the quote unquote good and bad times, you know, we did see a hunt, and it was frightening.
It was wild dogs and,
sable antelope. Yeah.
Both of which are somewhat endangered.
But, you know, it's funny today, you were calling today, and just this morning the television was on and there was a talk show on and somebody was being interviewed and they had just come back from Africa.
Oh, wow.
And they said, I didn't want to come home. And that's exactly how I felt. And, you know, when you say once you go, you want to keep going, I don't know. I don't think that we knew this when we saw you at Brighton Bush, but soon afterwards I got an invitation from the guide that we had. You know, it was on his newsletter that they were doing a trip in Tanzania in February. And I showed it to Tim and he said, let's go. We have to go. And so it is, it's like we're bitten by the Africa bug, and just, I think you were right to think that once you went, you have to keep going.
Oh, yes.
What Ellen said about the sense of community, you realize that most of these species survive by their community. It's a very fundamental aspect of their existence. The sable antelopes, you know, are able to defend their young, but only by acting and act in concert, only by
surrounding
them, and you know, from the predators and the dog packs that hunt very successfully in groups, and also have a social structure that's quite amazing, in that they provide for the young and the disabled before they provide for the alphas. The alpha parts of this the group, and so it's fascinating to watch that. The birds act as sentinels to warn when there's a predator nearby. They put off calls that basically warn the prey that there's a lion about, and you know, even the lions are prey to the elephants if they attack, and nobody's immune. And so all of them depend on their own sense of community, their own sense of interaction to propagate and make their species continue.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think, I mean, have you thought about how this relates to your own Reiki experience at all?
I think Reiki has a way of revealing the simple truths that might get mired in the complexities of our time. You know, it's Reiki. With Reiki, you have clarity and you sort of see the fundamentals, I think, a lot quicker than you do if you were leading a frenetic non-Reiki existence.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so it's a great value for me in Reiki is that it allows me to step back and stand in awe of things like the African experience and so many of the simple things you see every day and just say, ah, now I understand.
Wonderful. And what about for you, Ellen?
Well, I was going to say, even the people who are running the concessions, At least where
the concessions are in Africa, the places
where we stayed, the camps. And these people they'd stay there for 3 months at a time and without their families. So unless they happened to be, there was one couple there who, you know, they were married and they were there together, but even their children are someplace else and they stay for 3 months at a time before they go home. And the community that they have is really beautiful to watch too. And the way they work together and the way they serve the people who are there to be at the safari, and the way the warmth that they have for them, for each other and for us was just really great. It was really great.
Mm-hmm. I think the collegial nature of life in the camp is astounding. I mean, you don't feel like the people who are working there are so much working as enjoying showing you the experience, and they seem to relate to each other so well. And you know, it's not the kind of place where the servants eat in the kitchen. The people come out and sit down and eat with the guests, yeah. You know. And you know, there's a blurring of lines, which is wonderful, and I think totally appropriate. You know, if you can imagine your waiter sharing the meal with you. Pretty nice. You know, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you know, Phyllis, at Brighton Bush, Ellen Montague shared that song from, I can't remember which country it was from, Zambia maybe, where if somebody comes to a village and they sing to welcome that person. And that we didn't go to villages, but that was the sense that I felt of the people who were running the concessions where we were. They would come out and greet us every time we came back from a drive, a game drive. They came back out and greeted us. Sometimes they sang to us and, you know, offered hot towels and just phenomenal warmth and caring and interest in what we were doing and our impressions of what we saw. So they really made us feel part of their community.
Wow, that's great. Wonderful. Well, I'd like to take a step back, and because, Tim, you alluded to this where, you know, when you go out there, the landscape and what's happening in the landscape is really primordial. Like, it's like there's no time because this is what it was like 1,000 years ago. If we may say that. And I don't know, I might get some biologist kind of up in arms, but anyway, you know kind of what I mean. Yes. And I think that one of the things for me that I see in our society today, which is not wrong, it's just it puts us as human beings in a disconnected place from that primordial scene. And I feel it's so healing in the sense of the healing that I feel as a human being in my practice of Reiki is to go back to and to get a sense of what my actual place is in the world, in the natural world. And I'm wondering if you have any sense of that when you're in Africa.
Yeah, I think in Africa and in the Reiki exchanges at Brighton Bush, you know, you see that essentially it's a horizontal structure, you know. I'm also a business person, and, you know, the fact that there might be people who step up as leaders is a gift to have somebody who does that, but it's more, but everybody is actually leading from the grassroots, if you will. And in Africa, you see the interchange that happens, although it's fairly complicated on a kind of a micro level, on a macro level, it's quite simple. You know, that we all need each other. We all need to survive, and we all seek a pleasant life. And it's the same with the animals in Botswana as it is for the people at our Reiki exchanges and the people at Brighton Bush. It's people seeking a better life and doing it by sharing with each other.
Mm-hmm. Beautifully said. Ellen, do you have something to say to that?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, of course, mostly what we're talking about is the animal community that we saw. We didn't see, like I said, a lot of, you know, we hadn't gone into any villages. But it was interesting to me to also see how much their little communities were just like our human community. And that, for instance, the lions hunt at night, and so they sleep during the day. And we happened upon a pride of lions that there were some young ones, and one really young one who wasn't hunting at night. So she was going and nudging everybody and wanted to play, and they're batting her away. And it was just like, it was just like our kids, you know, it's like our adults and our children, you know, you see it happening. And she, you know, she's biting on her mother's tail. And then when it was time for them to leave, the little ones, it was this little one and then another one that was a few months older than her didn't come right away. So the mom comes back and, you know, she's trying to get them to go. And then she lays down with them and she's playing with them. And it was just so, it hit me so much about how like us that is, you know. And it was just a joy to watch. I mean, we have films of that, and I just keep watching it over and over and over again because I loved it. And I think Tim's right that, you know, with the community that we have here and the Reiki community, you know, we're there for each other. And just as the animal groups are there for each other too.
Mm-hmm. Great. And is there any way to sort of, let's see, how can I say this? Is there any way that you feel in Reiki that we can nurture this movement, or do you feel like it's something that's natural and will just come to fruition on its own?
I personally think that Reiki does nurture it. Whether, you know, will come to fruition on its own, I don't know. I mean, I think people do want to be in community, but I think that when you have a practice like Reiki, it really encourages it to happen faster and at a deeper level. And I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, I'm kind of from a organic growth mentality. I have a business that started very small and has gotten to be progressively bigger, and you know, there's something fundamentally satisfying about kind of maintaining a philosophy and a culture, whether you're starting a business or basically hoping for the growth of Reiki, and that you don't oversell it, but basically you just let it speak for itself. And I think that that's a stronger way to go. It's to, you know, live in a world where somebody advertises Reiki on TV, I think is like probably not as beneficial as just having one person tell another, you know, let me put my hands on you and try this. Mm-hmm. Let the experience speak for itself. To me, it's a wonderful way of building a sound structure. And most of all, I think the growth that I've seen in Reiki is because there's a lot of committed people who see the value and are not necessarily shy about telling other people about what they found.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'd rather go the slow, organic method as opposed to trying to see it take off like a rocket ship.
Mm-hmm. 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 Right.
There's a fellow who used to live around here, Malcolm Gladwell, who's written a book called The Tipping Point, where he makes some points about how something comes into ascendance. And, you know, and there is some phenomenal things that have just exploded. And maybe that'll happen with Reiki, but oftentimes with the explosion, there's a implosion eventually too. So, you know, I'm hoping that Reiki's around for 1,000 years and, it's like one practitioner at a time.
Right. Well, I had to laugh because, we just had a family gathering, here in Iowa where I am visiting right now. And, my 23-year-old nephew is reading The Tipping Point.
Oh.
And he just couldn't, and he's read the other book, The Outliers. Outliers.
Yeah.
And he just like, it wasn't a book review, but it was pretty detailed thing about what he had read and what he had learned and how he was obviously very excited about it. And so I decided that I'm going to put it on my recommended reading list as soon as I read it. So when I get a few minutes, I'm going to go to Amazon and buy the book and read it, because The Tipping Point sounded like really right on for many of the things that I'm doing right now. And it has, you know, a little bit of the 100th monkey kind of philosophy about the observations of nature. But I really loved from Zachary's point of view, where he goes with it. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't sound like he's like judging the human experience, but actually just observing it and saying, well, you make your choice. This is my observation. And, do you want the outcome to be different? Well, then we have to make a different choice from now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so much of what's in The Tipping Point is about, minor actions kind of coalescing to reach a crescendo that eventually becomes an overwhelming force. And in some respects, I think that's a kind of a likely path for our Reiki community, that you get a few people who really can be committed to something and quietly, carefully nurture it and watch it go. It's about, in many respects, about maintaining a sound philosophy and being committed to that philosophy and believing in that philosophy. And if you do, I think you have a good chance of changing the world.
Right. Wow. Well, that's really funny that it came up in our conversation today. He went to the airport yesterday and I said, okay, now you've got to text me the author and the name of the book. That's great.
Yeah. Pretty easy to remember.
I guess you're destined to read it, Phyllis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm wondering if your travels to Brighton Bush, where there is an established community in the sense that it's a continual moving community, but it's also established. It's kind of a paradox. Do you see an effect that's had on your Reiki community in Maryland?
Well, I think when you're in Brighton Bush, you see a much bigger version of what we have in Maryland.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think that in Maryland, you know, we're talking, you know, 50 or 100 people, maybe a few more than that, but it's not as big as what you see in Brighton Bush. Even though the numbers there are not, you know, they're only about 100 or so, but there it's, you get the sense of the Northwest because of, I think Mrs. Takata kind of planted a lot of seeds there, that there's been a lot more blossoming than there has been in Maryland, but we're on the path, I think, and, I think that we see growth and excitement here, and so we kind of have a miniature version of it.
And we try to organize workshops for people here too. I mean, it's not a whole weekend thing like at Brighton Bush, but I have brought in some people to come and speak and to do workshops at our house and for our community. So that's been a real great thing to have happen. Uh-huh.
And people, once they're into Reiki, I think once they hunger for more, more community, more, more times to share and more things to talk about.
Mm-hmm. What other kinds of strategies, if I may use that word, do you recommend to the listeners as far as building community, Ellen?
I think I agree with Tim about not being overbearing and not, I think in the beginning I was very, gung-ho about wanting to get this whole Reiki thing out there and getting people and advertising and whatnot. And I finally realized that what I really want is the slow way to do it. And I think that the organic way, as Tim was saying, is really been very helpful, is to just, you know, one person at a time, and then it becomes the one becomes two, and the two become more than that. And, you know, just living our life in Reiki and having people see what that's like. And, you know, it's just so wonderful to me. I just had a friend recently who was in the hospital. I went to him pre-op, and he was quite nervous about the surgery he was about to have. And as soon as I put my hands on him, he fell asleep. So I was at the gym the other day, and this other mutual friend of ours comes up and says, you know, your name just came up, and, you know, Harry was just telling me that what happened in the pre-op. And, you know, so it's just, you know, it's a little bit at a time gets out there. And I think people see the way that we're living, and they see, and when we have the whole group, it's just like what happened with the yoga group. And they see those of us who are Reiki sharing this experience with each other and talking about it and putting our hands on each other, and they want what we have. And so they slowly come to, you know, they come to it, and they realize that they want to be part of it. And then, you know, before you know it, that builds the community. And because we're in an area that is not so huge, I mean, of course, the Baltimore, Washington area is huge, but in the part where we are, you end up meeting people who know somebody that you know. And,
right.
And it's, and it just kind of grows very, very naturally.
Mm-hmm. Great. And do you imagine have you ever fantasized about having something like the Brighton Bush Gathering in Maryland, or would you like to just keep going back to the mother home Reiki gathering?
I do want to keep on going back, and I have fantasized about it. And it's actually, I think years ago, there used to be one on the East Coast. I can't remember her name, Penelope somebody had
Penelope,
run one.
Penny Jewel.
Penny Jewel, yeah, had run one on the East Coast, I think in the Northeast, and then had stopped doing that. And then Jerry
Jackson
did a Southwest Florida Reiki gathering to start one that way. So yes, and then in November there's a Mid-Atlantic conference, Reiki conference happening. It's mostly for Reiki professionals. It's a one-day thing. So slowly things are happening. I don't know if I have the drive or the will to organize one myself, but yes, I would love to see one out here that is as successful as the Northwest Reiki Gathering.
Uh-huh. Well, one of the things that I feel like has attributed to the success and certainly the longevity of it has been the possibility of a venue. You know, when we first started going to Brighton Bush Hot Springs, it was a very young community. That's a residential community where the residents own the business.
Mm-hmm.
And they're working for themselves, basically, which puts another whole layer of meetings and decision-making and so on the community, because they make decisions by community. And so... because this community has been successful in their attempt to have a cooperative, we've been able to always have the meetings there, right?
Right.
So I think that that has attributed a lot to this success of longevity.
I agree with you, because I know there was a time when I was looking to have a Reiki retreat for our community, even for a weekend retreat, just our small community here. And I did start looking at places, and at least not that I know of, there's not an intentional community like there is at Brighton Bush. So, you know, it becomes a whole nother thing, because you have to figure out about meals, and you have to figure out about so many things that Brighton Bush has right there already for you. So it's great that exists there, and in such a gorgeous place, and such a spiritual place.
Right. Exactly. Great.
Yeah, I think it actually could be done, but Brighton Bush is a gift in the sense that it has a kind of intentional spirit that's already in place.
Mm-hmm.
And when we come there for the Reiki gathering, it's a beautiful, beautiful hothouse for growing the Reiki community that is hard to match.
Mm-hmm.
Around here, we do have some intentional communities, but they don't necessarily have the kind of guest facilities that you see at Brighton Bush. So they have a wonderful head start.
Yes, I believe this too. And one of the things that I really loved when I was going to Europe a lot, like I basically lived there for a few years, and that is that I used to go to gatherings where there would be 200, 300, 400 people in attendance. And my experience of doing Reiki treatments in that group, like, say, 100 tables of Reiki with 3 people on each table,
mm-hmm.
is a pretty amazing experience. And it gives you a sense about what it would be like, as you know, to be in a group so large that the group experience actually lifts your experience, your personal experience of Reiki as a practice.
Absolutely.
Right.
We see it, you know, with our exchanges here, and see it on a bigger scale at Brighton Bush.
From the year that you were there, the tables were blowing out onto the porches, and you know, that's what we came back and told our group. It's just, you have no idea what it's like to be doing, all of us doing Reiki at the same time, you know, practicing Reiki at the same time. It's just a phenomenal, undescribable experience.
Uh-huh.
And to the extent that you can do those other places, it sure would be fun.
Really, I agree. Well, I do have this kind of a dream experience, you know, like a kind of Reiki bucket list of being able to have sort of a Reiki conference Reiki conference where there would be like up 500, 600, 700 people there, and to experience practicing Reiki with this group of people for 3 or 4 days, I feel like would really shift my level of consciousness in my practice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a theory. So I'm really anxious at some point to see when the time is right for me to test my theory.
Well, we'll be there.
Oh, okay. I'll keep you guys in mind.
Yeah, I would love to see that myself. That would be astounding.
Yes. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah, and I think if you can visualize it and believe it, you will make it happen.
All right. Well, I'm wondering, we're just about out of time, and I'm wondering if you have any Reiki dreams like that that you would like to share with the listeners.
Wow. you know, I don't know if I have an actual Reiki dream, but I feel like even the sense of being in a room full of 500 or 700 people all experiencing Reiki would be phenomenal. And I also feel that just being in our group of 16 or 20 people who are here for a Reiki exchange is very phenomenal as well. I mean, it's just such a wonderful sharing, and it just the warmth and the feeling in the room is terrific. And even doing Reiki classes, you know, people are like, oh my gosh, I've got to give up a whole weekend to come to a class. And then they're here and they say, oh, that was so wonderful. It was really relaxing and spiritual and renewing. And I guess my dream is to have more and more people become Reiki, just realize what a gift it is and that you don't have to be a special person to be able to practice Reiki, that anybody can do it. And I'd like to see them come and do it.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking of it in terms of its ability to bring a better perspective, a better world. And I just think that over time, given careful nurturing, everybody's going to come around to this. And eventually I think that will make the world a peaceful, more pleasant place, a place where, you know, the world that I think I and Ellen and I inhabit in large extent now, I think could be everybody's world. And I would wish that for the future. I believe it will happen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.